you're not wrong. Like, homie's talking about Noster too. It's not like he doesn't know things are happening. What up, world?
That's a good way to market the show.
It's a good way to start. Like, it's a fair question.
Moneyball caught on a hot mic.
Yeah, exactly.
It blows up on Twitter.
Holy shit. Let's go, baby.
You guys are good, right?
I'm good.
Say something each so they know that.
Check 1-2, check 1-2.
Moneyball and a hot mic.
Okay, I think that's working.
Do we have like a 10-second delay?
Yeah, so
if we say a naughty word, we can pause it or like
bleep
it out in case the FCC is coming after us.
It'll be broadcast just 10 seconds later.
Yeah.
we don't do anything.
You'll just have 10 seconds of anxiety.
What are the FCC? How is this show going to be regulated?
We're unregulated. We're only regulated by Elon's free speech.
Yeah.
Mafia.
I see.
I like our chances.
So what you had a hot take right before we started rolling on on self-driving cars?
Self-driving?
That wasn't such a hot take.
Or Fred Krueger.
Fred. Yeah. What did...
I like them both.
Well, you mentioned recently on the Joe Rogan podcast, Marketing News and so on, said all kinds of covered lots of great topics. And, but one of them, they talked about 30 crypto founders being debanked.
Uh-huh.
And then Joe Rogan's like, well, what would they do? If they can't have a bank account, what would they do? And it was the perfect tee-up.
Right, he said, what if you got $30 million? Where do you put it?
Yeah, and it's the perfect tee-up.
Damn.
For at least saying crypto, if not Bitcoin.
Right.
And Mark somehow missed that opportunity and talked about putting cash under the mattress and art and diamonds.
Right.
If only there was some way to take cash under the mattress and move it on the internet, you know?
Yeah. So did Krueger have a take on it, or did he have...
I just glanced at it, but he's more broadly talking about how VCs really have missed the boat on Bitcoin continually.
Mm-hmm.
Not every VC.
There's some sharp VCs who are ahead of the curve.
There's one or two out there.
I mean, the curve really well. But yeah, I mean, even the way 2013 VC wave of Bitcoin, even though they got into Bitcoin, they still completely missed it because they invested in payments in 2013, which clearly looking back at that, it's it was extremely premature. Even knowing what we knew in 2013, it seemed quite off. I mean, if you only read the white paper and that's it, it's it made sense. But if you understood the technical details behind Bitcoin and just the taxes and use cases development and readiness by the population to spend in Bitcoin, it just wasn't there.
But if you were to rewind the clock, knowing what we know now, which is hindsight 2020, et cetera, what's investable on a big scale back then? I guess Coinbase is
Bitcoin and exchanges. I mean, it's interesting to me because, to be fair to some of those funds, a lot of them did buy Bitcoin in 2013. And so those that did and hodled, they've done extremely well for themselves and their LPs. So that probably was the move.
But traditional VCs?
A couple.
Okay.
Some did.
There's a few. I think there's a few.
Like Pantera and Polychain.
They did.
There's some mainstream payment VCs.
What's the Dan Moorhead one? Is that?
Pantera
did.
Didn't they buy 2% of the supply?
Yeah, that's what he claims.
But I think even from traditional VCs, I think there's a few on record like...
Founders Fund definitely did.
Founders Fund did. I think Chamath and Social Capital did around that era.
But they sold.
He claims they sold... recently he claims that was a big ball fumble and they should have...
Ribbit did.
So there were a bunch of the trads that took small positions in it. It wasn't like the thesis of the fund. It was
Yeah. But your point stands very well in that. Other than that, if you look at, the move was just buy Bitcoin. The only other thing that could compete with just buying Bitcoin was investing in Coinbase. Some of the other exchanges have done, pretty well too. But your point is absolutely right that investing in BitPay was just way too early. And I think, sadly, what happened for a lot of them is, they kind of over-adjusted the other way. They're like, okay, we missed. It wasn't ready for payments. Clearly, Bitcoin's not the thing for payments. Go all in on whatever Doge, Litecoin, Ethereum, Solana, et cetera. and they kind of adjusted too hard the other way. Instead of just saying, no, this is like, we're watching a protocol development like the internet. You got to have patience. Payments will come. And, you know, obviously I started investing a lot of the payment stuff with Lightning in 21. And even myself, I still think, shoot, was I like one cycle too early? I hope not. I think a lot of those companies are going to do well now. But there's still a question, like maybe this cycle is the one where all that really plays out.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, I think your timing was either perfect or one cycle early, but
we'll find out.
A good time to take that that risk.
Yeah.
I think the other tricky thing is Max's fund is 21 million, right? At least fund one was
a baby,
21
yeah.
million. The baby, which is actually kind of appropriately sized for the opportunities of the market.
Good number too.
A lot of these other funds are just too big to like focus on Bitcoin in the way that you could, right? Like if you have to deploy $1 billion in crypto, you can't make a decision about like, you know, 50 great companies to fund, you know, kind of private companies to fund with like serious money.
That's right. I mean, most of the checks that I've been cutting are like at max, you know, $1 million, $250,000 to $1 million, $250,000 to $1 million. So if you have a $1 billion fund, like that just doesn't move the needle at all for you. Probably didn't even make sense to look at it. So I guess in that way, by being, you know, a bit of a noob to the game, I was both very fortunate, a little bit lucky in that. We'll see.
But I don't think, you know, Andreessen, you know, I know they get a lot of flack for the crypto stuff, but I don't think they hate Bitcoin. Like, I don't know if you read the 2014.
It was one of the best pieces of Bitcoin ever.
That's 2014. That's 10 years ago.
He was absolutely correct then.
They got it. He even talked about debanked or unbanked. So on Rogan, he talks about debanked, the 30 debanked founders. But on that piece, he talks about the unbanked, like people in like, you know, third world countries that are who don't have access to a bank account, and recognizing that that's like an important use case. So I don't know why.
Yeah, my conversations with Andreessen Horowitz, I think they would like to invest in Bitcoin companies. They have not seen good opportunities yet from their view. And I don't think they're that wrong, but I think it is coming and coming soon.
And to be fair to them, I mean, they co-led the Lightspark round, right? So
right.
When they did have a founder like a David Marcus, they were willing to invest. So all credit to them. But still, having said all of that, you know, I would love to hear, you know, from Mark himself. He was just on Rogan. He, like you said, he had the perfect tee up. We, you know, with a lot of these VCs, to be very fair, I think a lot of them frankly don't get it. Like either they haven't done the work or, you know, for whatever reason, it hasn't clicked with them. Mark's not one of those. Like he laid out the perfect piece in 2014. So I do question at some point, like, did you just forget it all in the last 10 years? Like what happened?
I'm sure if he had a do over, he would say Bitcoin.
Yeah, fair.
It might've just been an oversight.
Well, I wonder though, like, so take, you know, him take, you know, Elon has had like a pro Bitcoin stance at one point and then kind of his somewhat rotated out of that stance. I know Tesla still holds a bunch of Bitcoin on the balance sheet.
And SpaceX and Elon.
Yeah, so it's not like he hates Bitcoin. You know, same is like, you know, Andreessen wrote a piece really extolling the virtues of Bitcoin and now kind of avoids it or doesn't talk about it. I don't know if it's on purpose or, you know, just sort of, you know, absent-mindedness, but like, Is there something where people who did get into it and got it early may just trying to be like particularly quiet for one reason or another?
I think incentives, right? Like I think they're probably very different cases. Like to be, you know, fair to Elon, you know, he does get out here and joke around with Doge. And I think there is a part of him where, you know, even when he, I think responded to like a what Bitcoin did tweet or something some years back, he was like, oh man, these maximalists are just so annoying. I want Doge to win. And I get it. Like a lot of the maximalist people are annoying. But even though he's saying that and joking around with Doge, like look at his actions, right? Like all of his companies have only bought Bitcoin. Yeah, he had to sell some of it. We probably just bought too much relative to his cash flows. SpaceX hasn't sold any as far as I know. So his actions are still like, as far as I'm concerned, Bitcoin, Elon is a Bitcoiner, continues to build. In Mark's case, it's very weird. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure Andreessen probably bought Bitcoin too. I'm sure they've done very well as a fund. I hope, you know, the fact that he's mentioning Noster is very on the podcast. We haven't mentioned that yet, but he talks about Jack. He talks about Noster. I hope that's a sign that he's ready to come back in. But his case seems different than Elon to me. Because Elon, I mean, obviously Andreessen's also gone out and raised, what was their last crypto fund? $2 billion, $3 billion? Like massive, which is invested in not Bitcoin. So.
Mm-hmm. I suspect Elon's views on Bitcoin haven't really changed. It's not like he is pro and now against. I think he's just as much a Bitcoiner now as he was 3 years ago. But, you know, what actions could he have done in the last 3 years, really? Like, so in 2021, they not only, I mean, it was announced that he was holding Bitcoin in two companies and him personally, But Tesla also started accepting Bitcoin payments, but only did that for like a month before they retracted.
And was that an ESG thing? Or I thought I heard theories.
I think it was an ESG thing.
Like people said.
So I strongly suspect he had pressure from shareholders, employees, mm-hmm. the board, lots of different vectors of pressure, because that was the height of the environmental concerns around mm-hmm. Bitcoin mining. And he probably just looked at the calculus. He's like, probably sold like one or two cars with
right.
Bitcoin.
Right.
So it's not really driving the business. It was more just like a fun marketing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he's facing all this pressure. So like, let's just alleviate that pressure by taking it away. When I happened to interview him that year, I asked him like, what needs to happen for him to bring payments back on the ESG front? And he did say, like, you know, if more than 50% of mining is sustainable energy, then he would. And, well, we've achieved that, and we're still waiting.
But when did that happen?
Yeah, I think it was already the case then.
Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I suspect that he, again, it's just, he realized it's not, like, going to drive a lot of business. So, like, mm-hmm. what would he have done the past 3 years anyway, other than HODL?
I'm curious, though, like, he seems particularly mum on it. Like, we haven't heard a peep about it. We hear about Doge, we hear about all kinds of fun things he's into, but we haven't heard anything about that. So I guess that would lead me to conclude either he has changed his mind and doesn't like it, which I don't think is the case. I would guess he understands it and has some other strategic reason for kind of not mentioning it in years now.
I think he obviously has other priorities.
Yeah.
Like he bought Twitter.
Yeah.
Does he have any other companies? I forget. Yeah.
And then he's gotten into politics too, right?
Yeah, which has nothing to do with Bitcoin.
Clearly that sucks up a lot of his time. But he still could tweet about it. But again, like, I don't really know what he'd say that's to really his advantage right now about Bitcoin. Yeah. I mean, maybe you're alluding, like, X is working on some kind of, money system, money platform. Mm-hmm. Unclear if it's going to be completely fintech TradFi mm-hmm. or if it's going to introduce cryptocurrency. Don't know.
Well, so a couple of thoughts on the Elon thing. I mean, number one, I tend to agree that Elon obviously, I think he's even mentioned many times before, he's like, look, I get it, Bitcoin is a better gold, a better, potentially I think he understands the store of energy, the energy-backed mm-hmm. money piece as well. I mean, he is a physicist or, I guess, whatever he is. He's a physicist of the real term, whether or not, formally. I guess he does have a physics degree, but regardless. So I think for him, his main priority, what he said over and over again, is what really backs an economy is producing new goods and services. And mm-hmm. that's like all this guy does is produce new goods yep. and services. So I 100% agree with your take that like when he tried to accept it as payments, he was excited about it, realizes, oh shit, this is way too early to use as payments. Like no one's going to use it. Doesn't move the needle for me. And so I think, he's more interested in it only when it can move the needle for any of his businesses besides just like, and if you're hodling, in some ways you almost don't want to tell everyone about it because maybe you're stacking more in the background and whatever. Right. So the two areas I think are going to be very interesting. One is, I don't know if you guys saw this, but maybe it was a month or 2 months ago, maybe I was in like some like sub test group, but I was given the option to do Bitcoin payments on X.
Meaning to receive or to send?
No, to send. It was on Brian Romelli's account. Brian Romelli is like very...
He was the one who was able to receive?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if this is some breaking thing, but I just saw it on my like...
Did you tweet about this?
No, because I thought everyone was seeing this. I didn't realize this was a big deal. I was like...
You could have broken the story.
Well, maybe I'm breaking the story right now. But I've always thought that, Elon... I know we'll talk later about NOS, all the cool stuff we're doing there. Like, he's going to look and find all of our best ideas and bring it to X, and he'll probably execute better, which is great. I mean, actually, I love that. And, Brian, briefly, there was the option to send him, and I want to say it was integrated with Cash App. I'm not sure if it was a direct integration with Cash App or even the option to send a Bitcoin payment, but it said, send a tip to Brian Romelli's account, and he was talking about it, and Bitcoin was an option. So I was in some very small test group.
Did you have to load Bitcoin into an?
I didn't actually send him the tip.
A wallet or something? Or?
I remember, honestly, I don't even remember now how it worked. I remember I clicked it, I think.
I'm calling fake news.
Right? Sounds like fake news.
No, it maybe was, but like I can go back and try and find this. If Brian Romelli happens to listen to this pod, maybe he can confirm that. But I saw it on his Twitter account. Anyways. Point being, I expect X is going to add Bitcoin payments there, even if that was a mirage. The other thing that I'm really excited about, though, on the Tesla side, is I think, you know, people sleep, they talk about Tesla as a car company, now as a robot company, but their energy and storage business is absolutely a monster and growing rapidly. And
what fraction of the overall business is it today?
I don't know what the fraction in total revenues is, but I want to say, you know, they are, I believe, the largest amount of batteries deployed is coming from Tesla and, you know, the utility scale right now. So like even the Powerwall at home is small relative to the utility scale stuff. But that's some numbers I can get in the future. What I'm really interested in is when they start combining the energy business with the storage business with the Bitcoin business. And we know he understands this because actually Steve, that same year, Steve and I both were contributors to this paper that Block put out on Bitcoin being, this was in 2021, I mm-hmm. believe, 21. Bitcoin being great for renewable energy because it's this flexible load that can allow you to oversize solar systems. And then ARC built a model that showed how that could work. Obviously, ARC is up in Elon's ear. So I think it's only a matter of time before that business starts using things like Bitcoin mining, potentially other flexible loads like compute. I think right now, AI compute has taken a lot of the sort of wind out of the sails or room out of the air because that's where all the energy is going. Mm-hmm. But I think in time, his energy business alone is going to use this as another tool in the toolbox to oversize and build larger solar arrays. So that's where I think he can also get really involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Should we dabbled on a little bit around this kind of capital market stuff. You want to take a shot at some of the capital markets changes?
Go for it.
All yeah, right. DK leaves off.
Well, there's so I guess everybody's heard of the MicroStrategy thing. It feels like everybody's talking about MicroStrategy and, you know, what's happening with it. I think people who don't really understand it look at it and think it's something like GameStop, right? Like I think any of my kind of traditional VC, kind of non-Bitcoin seem to think of it as like, oh, it's like one of these trading things that goes up really high and crashes and it sort of just some sort of levered thing on this other thing. And I think there's actually something much more interesting going on with it that is not really well understood by anybody but like a pretty kind of hardcore enthusiast of MicroStrategy. And that is the way that it is kind of bringing capital market debt providers to get convertible debt to be able to convert to own MicroStrategy. Mm-hmm. And that as kind of a playbook helps these debt providers kind of look like heroes when, you know, they get to own some equity that's appreciated, you know, years from now based on that kind of Bitcoin treasury. But now there's all these other companies doing it, right? So I think, was it in the last week or so we saw, was it Rumble?
Similar.
Metaplanet, Semler Scientific?
Marathon.
Marathon. So were those all just announced recently? I mean, some of them, like Semler had announced before, Metaplanet had announced before, but were the new ones like Rumble and Marathon? Were just announced.
Yeah, I think it's been in the works for a while for Marathon, but I don't know when it became pop. I mean, it might have just been recent when it became public.
And yeah,
but so I think compared, you mentioned GameStop, and I agree. To an outsider who only reads headlines, they might think it's the same, but there's like several fundamental differences, right? I mean, one, MicroStrategy is holding a tremendous amount of Bitcoin, so there's a real asset behind it versus literally just a meme. Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned Bonnell, but there's two different stakeholders here, constituents that are there's bond fund managers and equity fund managers, mm-hmm. and those two groups, there are many, there's trillions of dollars in each of those groups that cannot access Bitcoin any other way.
Right.
And they want exposure to Bitcoin. They want exposure to the upside of Bitcoin and the risk reward. They view it as an amazing diversification for their portfolios, mm-hmm. and what Michael Saylor's figured out is how to package that up into a product for each of those groups. Mm-hmm. And so for like bondholders, they are issuing a traditional convertible debt bond. If it does convert, then they get, as you mentioned, equity in MicroStrategy and thus have access to some of that Bitcoin. Even as a debt holder, though, they're the first. In case of a bankruptcy or a bad yep. outcome, they're the first. They get first dibs on that Bitcoin as well. So it's a relatively conservative bet for them, with a really nice upside surprise if Bitcoin does moon this cycle. So I think it's super attractive to them, and they're obviously demonstrating that. Very traditional funds are partaking. What was the German? There was a German insurance fund or something.
I forgot their name.
Yeah. And AIG or
no,
somebody else.
It was a different one. But And then similar with, I mean, it's the same story with equity, certain equity funds. They can't buy the ETF or any of the ETFs. They can't buy Bitcoin off like Cash App or Coinbase. So the only way they can get exposure is through equities. And sure, they could buy miner stocks or Coinbase or Block to get like a proxy, but MicroStrategy is like the, given their extreme strategy with Bitcoin, it's the most purest form of getting exposure to Bitcoin, as well as levered form too.
And do we know, I think one of the trickiest parts of all of this is how do you figure out how many shares total are outstanding of these things? Have we seen, like, what's the best kind of, have we seen anybody who's done a really good analysis to show, like, if and when these converts convert, how much equity will they convert to, how much new issuance of MicroStrategy shares will occur, and sort of just to help think through that process? Do we have anybody?
You sent out a video with some guy doing the math.
I didn't
take it with a grain of salt.
I do want to study it, though, to see if he had some good logic behind his numbers, but I did the TLDR for if he's correct, it's going to require a very extreme outcome for MicroStrategy to demonstrate its market cap valuation right now.
Yeah,
by
I think I didn't vet his model, so maybe it's completely wrong, but that they would need to buy 1 million Bitcoin in order to justify the current valuation, let alone any kind of future appreciation of the valuation.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, there's obviously a lot of takes on MicroStrategy right now. I have not personally done the work to say which ones are absolutely right, which are wrong. We obviously all have a mutual friend who's much deeper in this game, and I if I'm going to take someone's sort of secondhand thoughts, I'll take his secondhand thoughts, which are a lot of these models are not doing the converts correctly. So I'm taking everything with a heavy grain of salt. But I do think, you know, to your earlier point, Steve, just to give everyone an idea of the order of magnitude of this, the size of this arbitrage, because I think to me that's the real story.
Yeah,
is, you know, when you talk about the bond guys and the equity guys, you know, my understanding is the equity guys, you know, there's at least tens of trillions of dollars in those kinds of funds, and probably hundreds of trillions of dollars in the bond market funds. So when we look at the, you know, percentage of global overall economy, we're talking like meaningful double digit percentages of the entire amount of wealth in the world are in these two pools of.
But my understanding is the convertible debt markets are different than the overall debt markets, right? Like it's a narrow subset?
Yes, but what I assume is happening here is that more of the debt guys are probably moving into this. Like my understanding is that convertible debt is much smaller today, but I actually don't know this to be the case, but my understanding was that more debt guys will be able to play in the convertible debt game than have in the past. Like, I think this is going to bring more people into that world, is my understanding. But regardless, even if it's only some fraction of hundreds of trillions of dollars, we're still talking about tens of trillions of dollars in each case. And so I think the real arbitrage story here is just, hey, the people that manage this money, they're smart. They're starting to grok Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. They can't hold Bitcoin. The only way they can hold anything that appreciates with Bitcoin so far has been MicroStrategy. There's literally no other game in town. Now, you know, you've got a couple of companies imitating Metaplanet, but the Japanese capital markets, those are not nearly as deep. You've got similar, and that actually, I was just checking it out, has done better than MicroStrategy on a percentage, I think in the last week or two. So maybe some of that capital is going to move in, but as a market cap, they're still extremely small. They don't have any, you know, options around it. I also think something that's interesting on the MicroStrategy case is, do I think they're 3-to-1 NAV? Like, is that going to, that premium going to continue? I have no idea. I don't understand how that specific number came about. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But if I personally were holding in that or something else, I would continue to hold in MicroStrategy, one, because Saylor has control, two, he's shown he has balls of steel, but three, there do appear to be some network effects, and I'm only starting to understand why this is so important, but around options and derivatives on the MicroStrategy stock. And the reason that's important is, you know, if someone wants to be able to place, if someone's betting with other people's money, they need to be able to hedge those positions as well to like potentially dampen the downside of their investment. Mm-hmm. And so for someone that's just YOLOing into Bitcoin or YOLOing into MicroStrategy, it doesn't matter. But for these big institutional managers, having those instruments and derivatives around it, that's very important. And as of today, you know, MicroStrategy and probably, you know, a couple of the big ETFs like BlackRock, they have the most liquid and deep derivatives markets. And I think that's also super important and somewhat of a moat for Saylor.
Is that MSTX? I see people talk about MSTX.
I'm not sure.
But there's MSTX and MSTU. I don't even know the difference between the two, but at least one, if not both, are 2x levered funds.
Oh.
2x MSTR.
They're not to do with, they're just a levered derivative. They're not like a collar hedging strategy or something.
No, it's a 2x.
It's more exposure.
So
we heard you like vol. We put vol in your vol.
Yeah. I have a couple friends who are investors in that. And then they recently did the math to demonstrate how risky it really is. So you like let's see if I get this right. So let's say you have both MSTR and the 2x leverage fund, and let's say there's a day where there's you know like a 55% crash in MicroStrategy or a period of time in mm-hmm. which it goes down 55%. I think it might have to be in the same day. So now you know they're each. Or so MicroStrategy is it? Let's say you started with 100 units. Yeah. MicroStrategy, you have 45 units of value, and the other one you have 10, because it's 2x levered.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next day, it goes up
100%. Right.
You know, so now you're back to 90. So you've almost recovered.
Yeah.
But the 10 goes to 20.
Yeah. Right.
you've not almost recovered.
Right.
Another one. So it's extremely risky. Given that you know it's a volatile. MicroStrategy is going to be volatile.
Right.
I mean, Saylor explicitly says this is a feature.
Yeah.
Volatility is a feature.
That's what he's saying.
Right. Basically, there's these capital pools with a mandate. It says like Max, you can only invest in venture capital.
That's right.
You can't just choose to invest your whole fund in Bitcoin. Just even if you thought that were the best return, you can't do that.
It's not allowed. Yeah.
And there's people who have funds that are convertible debt funds, and they have to invest in convertible debt. They can't invest in equities, they can't invest in Bitcoin, commodities, they can't do any of that. Then there's people who can only invest in equities. They can't invest in ETFs or convertible debt funds or venture capital. They can only invest in equities. And sort of, he's just creating a bridge to match these, right?
Also, Pierre Richard wrote something 10, 11 years ago, a post titled Speculative Attack.
Hmm.
With Bitcoin or whatever, but yeah. This is basically an implementation of that vision,
oh,
which
wow.
is cool to see play out.
Yeah. I mean, how specific was it? Was he talking about convertible debt and stuff, or
not specific? But the general, I mean, the speculative is where you assume the money printer go burr with the U.S. dollar,
mm-hmm.
and so if you assume that continues or just continues to increase over time. And you have conviction about what Bitcoin is and what it represents, then it makes a lot of sense to take as much debt as you can on the US dollar and buy Bitcoin and just keep doing that
forever.
Mm-hmm. Forever.
Yep.
Forever, Laura.
Exactly. There is no top.
That's exactly what Michael Saylor is doing. So it is fascinating to see this experiment play
and
out.
And by the way, shout out Pierre Richard. Like, I actually don't know Pierre super well or anything, but that dude has just been right so many times for so long with such strong conviction. Like, I just like to shout out excellence where it is. Like, excellent piece. He saw the future a long time ago.
I would second that. And another thing Pierre got right recently is a few years ago proposed a potential bill for the United States to hold all the Bitcoin seized by like criminal investigation instead of auctioning it off,
mm-hmm.
hold it in a Bitcoin strategic reserve for the United States. And that's literally what is being. That's literally what.
Where have I heard that recently?
2 or 3 years ago.
Nice.
So before you
is
know.
He the one he works on that mining company?
Riot.
He's at Riot now.
Yeah.
Okay.
And before that, he got Kraken to integrate Lightning. Like he's an OG.
I first met Pierre when he was contributing to Bitcoin Core. So when I got into the space in 2017, I mean, he'd already had a rich history of like being a thinker of Bitcoin and writing a lot and helping people understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But he is contributing to Bitcoin Core. He's not as hardcore developer as like a lot of the core devs, but he was building tools to help them do a better job and be able to figure out which PRs to review and which basically just building dev tools to make them more efficient. And then he built in 2018, 2019, he built like a tool to install like LND and like get a Lightning node up and running.
Yeah,
easier. But like when it was extremely hard to get it up and running.
One of the coolest things. So he probably doesn't even remember. We spoke very briefly, but I went to one of the first Lightning hack days in New York City. This was in 2018, And I remember watching Pierre, and at the time I knew nothing. I was just like, I know we had chatted kind of recently before that, and I was like, okay, I have to see what's happening there. And one thing that I respected a lot about Pierre was not only that he had, you know, some good development chops, but he was very realistic about like how the world actually works, where the actual money is, where the actual users are. And so one of the things he was building in that little hack day was a tool to connect Lightning Network payments to Excel. And I was like, that's so boring. Then I started thinking, I was like, well, actually, if all of the money managers in the world are using Excel, like, okay, this starts making a lot of sense to me. So I've always liked that he's a very, like, just realist guy of, like, looking at where's the wealth, where are the users, like, build for that.
Yeah. And do we know what is he doing today? Like, is he kind of more a technical contributor or, like, a kind of a thinker and speaker on the
topic? He's full-time at Riot. So
like, what's his role at Riot?
I don't know. Oh. I don't know specifically that. I mean, he's
evangelist
a podcast interviewer. When I was in Austin earlier this year, he interviewed me on the
Riot podcast. Oh, I have to listen to that one. Nice.
On the Riot podcast.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
We'll have to get
and they even have a studio at their in their offices, but I didn't go there. He came to Bitcoin Commons.
How are their views?
Well, I didn't get. Oh, Bitcoin Commons, yeah.
No, I mean, do they have a nice view like this?
It's a downtown Austin view.
And also, I mean, just being at Riot, I mean, he's one of the few guys in that company that really understands this bigger picture. I think this is something that, you know, I've been trying to get out there for a long time, but that eventually people will see Bitcoin as energy-backed money. Mm-hmm. The energy industries and the Bitcoin industries become one and the same. If you're a utility, of course you're going to be in mining or vice versa. They're going to all fuse. And Pierre has been extremely vocal about taking that, telling those stories from theory, but in actual reality. Like, he was big on explaining when the Texas storms hit in Austin, like, okay, actually, no, we have demand response programs that are able to pay miners to shut down temporarily when the costs justify that. We need that extra electricity. Like, he's taken a lot of these ideas and, like, helped make them become reality, which is cool.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
He's also one of the best trolls in this space on Twitter.
Excellent trolling's got to be called out as well.
Excellent troll. And not in a... There's different types of trolls. He's not like an asshole troll.
What are the different types of trolls? I don't know.
He's a Bitcoin maximalist, but he like especially in like 5-6 years ago when there's a lot of Bitcoin versus Ethereum discussion and debate and stuff. He was like extremely good representative of Bitcoin versus Ethereum.
I remember he was the one guy that quote ran the numbers and like tried to show what was the definitive amount. Yeah, audit Ethereum. Like he was the Ron Paul of Ethereum there. He was like, no, let's actually find out how many Ether outstanding. And like the takeaway was we can't actually do that. I don't remember anything else.
Is that
else.
Right? Even today you can't. Audit
He got Ethereum. Advocates to admit that you can't count how many Ethereum.
It was close. It was close. But
this was in the era of ultrasound money or no?
Yeah, pre. This was like 2021. But I remember.
I believe the TLDR. I mean, it's like kind of negligible, so it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. But it's still comical.
It was just funny.
You can get close to a good sense of it.
Yeah.
Is it?
It was just good trolling.
Yeah. Okay, so on capital markets, I still have other questions. I know we're
back to the serious talk.
The serious stuff. So you mentioned kind of these options markets that are emerging around MicroStrategy. Presumably, at some scale, there would be options markets that go around Semler and around, you know, Metaplanet and these others. So, like, I guess my question is, if you are thinking about allocating, you know, of course, I'm going to advocate first, you know, your BTC cold storage, but if you're like in one of these groups that needs to do it, or you want to do 401k and you don't want to self-direct it, or an IRA or whatever, do you think that MicroStrategy is obviously the one to get involved with, or do you think that these up-and-comers, like, is MicroStrategy unassailable in its position there, or are these up-and-comers like just as good and probably cheaper on a MNAV perspective and so worth considering, or have you sort of done any analysis or thinking there, or just kind of like go with the leader?
Well, I think there's a few aspects. One is like, you know, as we mentioned earlier, MicroStrategy is a pretty good pure play for Bitcoin. Whereas like a Coinbase or Block / Cash App is much less so. Like with Block, you've got a major business in Square, a major business in Cash App, and Bitcoin's a small part of
the
business.
It's not a crappy enough business to do the Sailor thing.
Well, so that's anyone could do it. Just to be clear.
You know, so and we've talked before about like, you know, should Microsoft or Facebook or you know, Apple, Google do this? And of course they can't do it because they all have like extremely profitable businesses.
Yeah.
Some of the best businesses in the history of the world. And so they just can't create a financial investment that looks like a Bitcoin pure play. They're just not in that position. So you do need like a crappy business to pull it off. That's one thing.
It's a Goldilocks window.
Some of these others that are doing it now might fall into that category. I mean, they're not like Google or Microsoft. So right. then the question is, has MicroStrategy, you know, have they reached escape velocity, and are they, as you said, unassailable? And I don't know. There might be some certain components to being successful. One is, you can't have a profitable, like a successful profitable business aside from this. Two, you know, if you look at Michael Saylor, he's like a phenomenal salesperson and spokesperson, mm-hmm. and he's aggressive and he's on every day. You know, he is out there every day selling. And so, you know, if you don't have that, like he's a one-man marketing machine. Mm-hmm. So if some other shitty business doesn't do that, how are they going to market themselves, right? So you need that sort of brash,
is that probably why,
loud,
like,
salesperson.
Dylan LeClaire is he hired or is he a consultant now with Metaplanet, I think? Is he meant to be kind of the Michael Saylor of Metaplanet?
I didn't hear that, but, you know, so, but.
But he's a different kind of style. Well,
I mean, what I know of him through his X account, I mean, he sort of fits that mold, but like a tenth or a hundredth of the volume.
And he doesn't have the, like, founder.
So I believe, David, you have someone in mind who has an existing audience, is a strong, charismatic salesperson who can rival or even surpass Michael Saylor.
Yeah.
Who do I
think that could be? Well, I threw out, I call it the Chamath hypothesis, right? Okay. So it's like, another hypothesis is you've got, you know, you could bet on Semler or bet on, you know, Metaplanet. But I think, you know, Chamath is one who kind of has a pretty big audience, you know, with the All In podcast and Twitter X, whatever. And I think he's kind of been king of SPACs. So he's like,
for better or worse.
But, you know, he's shown that you can kind of, he has the relationships with TradFi to kind of will something into existence in the public markets. And, you know, probably could get the right assembly of capital to do that if you wanted a pure play kind of Bitcoin treasury company to show up tomorrow. I think he would be, I mean, I've been brainstorming with friends around, like, what would that look like and who might be able to pull it off, and that's the...
And he invested in Bitcoin a decade ago. Yeah.
He understands it.
He understands Bitcoin.
Oh, he's been recently kind of lamenting the losses that, you know, that they, well, the opportunity cost.
He can make up for it.
Yeah, you're not too late.
I'd almost say strategically kind of complaining, oh, I was so early and that was so dumb of me to sell so much of it and I could have made so much money.
Yeah.
But maybe the next shoe to drop is...
Okay, so I actually have a couple of thoughts on that. Yeah. First, I'm not saying I disagree, but I just want to push back to play devil's advocate on this idea that you have to be a bad business to pull a sale.
Oh, come on. Okay.
Just to push back on this, okay? Well, I'm serious. At what point, if MicroStrategy becomes a top 10 company next year, it's trading literally as a top 10 market cap company. Yeah. Do we still agree with that?
No, the point is it has to be a non-revenue producing company. Or a minimally revenue or minimally profitable.
So I'm saying willing suspension of disbelief. Like I understand it seems extremely unlikely, but just imagine for a moment, not that you have, you know, someone like a Mark Zuckerberg that does have the founder control. Founder control is also super important, something mm-hmm. I want to come back to and hark on. And imagine that, you know, Zuck, for example, probably has other motivations. He wants to build virtual reality. He wants to build artificial intelligence. I get it. And if those are your motivations, you're going to make a lot of money. It's going to be awesome. Like, build the awesome future. But imagine for a moment, you just want to make as much money as humanly possible, which it appears is what Saylor's playing.
Right. But so let's say Zuck did that with Meta.
Yeah.
But the problem is it completely changes the sales pitch.
It does.
To the bond funds and equity fund holders. Because they want Bitcoin exposure.
Totally.
They don't want a weak proxy for that. They don't want exposure.
They don't
to
want
Facebook's
the possibility
business.
That, like, what if the metaverse is real and gets controlled by this company? They don't want that exposure. That's upside exposure that some people want. They don't want.
That's a fair point. So at the very least, I would argue he should put all of their treasury into Bitcoin, which maybe at some point he will. Mm-hmm. Like, start by dipping the toes. But, like, again, if I almost wonder at that point, if you were just saying, I just want to make as much money as humanly possible, I get your point that it sort of sullies or dirties the marketing pitch. But then I almost wonder, like, if you just were looking at this as maximum returns, do you spin off a sub-company of some form? Like, how can you use the fact that you have all these capital relationships, you have the ability to raise infinitely and play this game? There's got to be some play there.
So I think to that point, the point is, when people are making a public company investment, they're sort of betting on an idea.
Right.
Ultimately, it's like one idea, and it's often like, it's like, oh, it's that, you know, you end up, once an idea works, then they get sort of diversified into many ideas, and then maybe a new one takes over as the idea that's kind of the future.
Right.
But like, if you have like, well, we've got this, like, these metaverse ambitions, these Meta Ray-Ban glasses that could end up generating a lot of revenue at some point, and we have this Bitcoin treasury thing, it's like three different bets in a sense.
So
What you have to do is you have to say, like, look, I'm going to use my capital relationships, you know, public market relationships, and I'm going to create a new company and SPAC it into existence and use a treasury or some sort of, like, I think you'd have to do something
a separate story to sell that. And again, I mean, I know this sounds crazy, but like, imagine for a minute, just again, all you want to do is make the most money. I mean, there is a world. I don't think you could do this because the storytelling is too complex. You literally fire everyone. You shut down everything. You say, we're only going in on like riding the Bitcoin wave for 2 years, and then maybe we come back to it. I think that's too hard to thread the needle. You'd probably need to spin off a separate company, something like that. But I do think
people— And then
people,
what, Instagram's just like dead? You just can't use it?
Well, exactly.
Like, refresh, nothing happens.
This is what I'm saying. You have to spin it off of something else. But I do think— I guess the point that I'm trying to make with this more hyperbolic example is just, I think people are going to be shocked at, like, just like in 2013, like, I still think the big idea is just buy and hold Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like, the people that get that and go after it aggressively, even if it sounds crazy and it's like, oh, but I've got all these other things going on, it's like, that's still going to be the big winner, is my view. But coming back to something that's more realistic of what's actually going to happen in reality, do we still think MicroStrategy is the best bet, even with some of these other things coming up? I agree with everything you said, Steve, about Saylor being a great salesperson. It's not just that, though. It's also how much conviction do you have in the founder and who controls that company.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a couple of factors. That's the first one. The fact that Saylor is a great salesperson, he's also done the proof of work. He's got 5 years now, or, you know, four going on 5 years of just being so, like, you know that guy. Like, he is the biggest zealot in the world.
Yeah.
This similar dude, I don't know too much about him. I don't know how deep on Bitcoin he actually is. I don't know how much of his company he actually controls. Obviously, I can go look these things up, but he certainly doesn't have 5 years of history of like being all in on Bitcoin. The risk you take, one risk you take with some of these companies that are Bitcoin proxies versus ETFs, is you're not getting documents saying this person has to hold the Bitcoin. Like you said, I mean, he could go crazy tomorrow and, you know, sell it or something like that, right?
You're saying that Semler could, or MicroStrategy, or anybody?
Anyone where you have founder control. Like, you're
literally— Or they could loan it out.
Yeah, or they could say, actually,
they,
we're going all in on—
Yeah.
We're going all in on ultrasound money.
Yeah.
And whatever, Solana. And so the broader point that I'm making is you're literally making a bet on a human being. And so you better really trust that that human being is going to do what he says he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's something that you can't just like jump in out of nowhere and build that kind of trust. The second thing that I think is extremely undervalued with MicroStrategy, and again, as it's kind of taking off, is the fact that we haven't even talked about this yet, but they're not officially included in the S&P 500 yet.
Right. Well, today's the QQQ day, right?
Is it? Okay. I didn't realize
that. I think today, like, it's probably happening now or in the next 20 minutes.
So does that mean they're going to be included by the end of the day?
I think it is decided who will be included by the end of the day, and I don't know if
so they will. Does that mean, I haven't checked all of the numbers this morning, but, like, I would assume that means MicroStrategy is going to fucking rip in the next coming days.
Yeah, if it gets added to the QQQs, it will.
So this is the difference between it and similar and all these other companies, is I don't think people also realize how much of the world's wealth— it'd be good to find a number. If someone's listening has a number, please tell us— but is essentially passive index funds. And so the passive index funds, all they do is buy weighted averages of the S&P 500. Okay. Well, you've got MicroStrategy surging from this irrelevant company, just like surging into the S&P 500. Now all of these passive index funds have to buy it, even if they loathe Bitcoin or don't know what Bitcoin is. What is that going to do? It's going to be new rocket fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think the next thing, and this is where you become more of a trader, which I'm not really a trader, I know none of us are, but then to your point with the GameStop piece, the meme piece, I don't even think that's started yet. Like, you have this stock that, you know, clearly he's playing a very smart game where he's also managing, to the best of my understanding, leverage pretty well. So his, you know, sats per share is increasing. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he can actually make up for that 3x NAV. Then they're about to get into the S&P 500. Then on top of that, I saw, like, maybe a week ago, the first MicroStrategy shareholder that owns a bunch of billboards in some southern state, maybe it was Texas, maybe Arkansas, is just putting up MicroStrategy $444 a share, Bitcoin.
I thought those AI generated. That's real?
I think it's real. I don't know if it's real or not, but
it certainly could be. I don't know.
Whether it's real or fake, the point is the GameStop crowd has not arrived yet.
Right.
And once the GameStop crowd arrives, on top of that, then you add the meme magic on. I think MicroStrategy is just going to get wild. And one other small thing we haven't talked about. This is for all the stocks. Anyone that has Vanguard, you can't buy the ETF. So all the Vanguard holders are forced into MicroStrategy as well.
Right.
I don't know, man. I think MicroStrategy is going to rip.
And I don't disagree with any of that. I mean, it would not surprise me, like you said, sort of, if you wanted to just maximize returns or value or money, I think it could be that, it would not surprise me if someday MicroStrategy is the most valuable company on the planet.
Right.
That's reasonable, but I think you can't start a competitor to MicroStrategy unless you are focused on a Bitcoin treasury as your core business. And I think the only kind of existing businesses that can do that are things that are basically like a shell of a business. Not like a good business.
I would agree. It's substantially easier. Like I would never say you can't.
Say you can't.
If you're Michael Saylor, there's will.
Even the example of like Zuck has conviction and then like creates a new company and takes the Facebook treasury and moves it to that new company. I don't think that seems completely unrealistic.
I agree.
Controls coming, like the board would throw up on the idea of taking their entire treasury and putting it in this another vehicle.
Maybe you need the DOJ to separate.
Yeah, exactly.
Google from was it Chrome is going to get split out?
Yeah, and Chrome is going all in on Bitcoin.
All in on Bitcoin. The Chrome company.
I love that. Now your point is well taken. I agree. Like for realistic standards, it's not going to happen. But I do think if one just looks as an investor. And these CEOs are investors of capital, and you say, I think there's a real chance that MicroStrategy becomes the most valuable company in the world, and I do. I mean, you see his playbook, so.
Yeah. So are you buying?
no financial advice whatsoever. I'm actually not. To be fair, the only reason I would even do something like that is for like passive IRA funds anyway. Like I'm not really a gambler. I don't also really care. Like I think it's interesting and fun, but like, again, there's also risk, right? Like we don't know. And this is the deal with any, single founder bet, which I'm also very long Elon and Tesla for very different reasons. But like, you never know. That's a lot of key man risk, even with Saylor. So I would never put all my money into MicroStrategy.
Yeah, for anyone who has the option to buy Bitcoin directly, they should not be all in on MicroStrategy. They should hold, if they want exposure to Bitcoin, it should primarily be in cold storage, owning directly Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and any portion of their Bitcoin allocation that goes to MicroStrategy, I would recommend like a small portion and really view it as like high risk, high reward.
I agree with that.
I think whenever this current bull cycle ends, I think we are gonna likely see a big rise in MicroStrategy and then a big fall. The difference, though, between shit coins and like GameStop and meme coins, whatever, there is a fundamental thesis to this and an underlying strong asset if you believe in Bitcoin. So I don't think it falls to zero. Mm-hmm. It might fall to its current level or a little below current level or even a higher level.
But there is
likely survive the bull run. But if you are in that last X percent of people who bought in the equity, you're gonna lose out on that, and you have the one person risk that you mentioned, Max. You have to account for that risk. The MicroStrategy might not execute as foretold.
Yeah.
Whereas if you hold Bitcoin in cold storage,
exactly.
You're not at risk of any human being.
Right.
Like any human being's actions.
But isn't there some downside number because of the way volatility exposure works that if the price of Bitcoin, the underlying asset, dropped below a certain number, I think I heard somebody say 22K, I think Shkreli said 50K or something, but
14 or 15K.
Is that what it is? So if it drops below that, what happens? Do these bond funds get some sort of liquidation preference on the capital stock of the company, or what happens? Does it get wiped out, or?
Yeah, I don't know the exact structure, but so So I don't know if there's like I think it is a capital call at that point, and then they wouldn't be able to meet the requirements.
Yeah. So the bondholders would own all the equity, basically.
And the Bitcoin, unless right. they sold the Bitcoin.
Unless they had their first sales. Yeah, I'm not sure.
That's it. I think they'd be forced to sell. Mm-hmm. And so if they sell all of it, then there'd be basically no assets.
Right.
And then you're left with MicroStrategy, the original company.
Business intelligence.
Exactly.
Business intelligence software.
Yeah.
But you could on these things, like, I think you shared a link about how, I think he's talking about producing yield, like now that they're one of the biggest treasuries of Bitcoin, there might be some sort of a yield product. And I think I shared an idea on our group chat about a potential product, like a treasury product that he could launch or something like that. And I think you were like, oh, that's hopium. And like nobody announced that. That's just pure speculation. Well, I only said
hopium. Yeah. They could do that.
But I guess I wasn't trying to predict a specific product that should be announced. But I guess, like, is there some additional premium you would consider, because there's a big pool of things, and whatever kinds of financial services are needed around that big pool, they're like a great kind of test case or prototype or first customer of themselves for such a tool.
Yeah, I agree with you that that's possible. The only reason I said hopium is, like, if you're like a Wall Street analyst who calculates, like, projects cash flows and stuff, there's mm-hmm. no stated strategy
right.
for you to base anything on in terms of any kind of future cash flows from that. Mm-hmm. So it would be pure hopium and speculation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that doesn't mean that people buying it don't have that view. And mm-hmm. so there could be a premium already built in for future business, unannounced businesses. I just don't think any Wall Street analysts are like creating models around that, because there's nothing to model off.
I'm saying it would reduce, if we're talking about a 3x MNAV or whatever, it may reduce it to a 2.5 or a 2 or a 1.5, which a Semler or a Metaplanet probably has very little potential of ambition at that scale today.
Well, so one way I'm thinking about this, I agree, this is all complete speculation, and I also agree with Steve's point, like, once you're playing in this game, like, you are kind of gambling. By the way, one other sort of side note on this I think is very important is, I think one of the beautiful side effects of the whole Saylor MicroStrategy thing is he's bringing a lot of the cryptocurrency gambler people in here.
Right.
Because again, and I don't even know what the right answer is, but, you know, imagine we say there's some fundamental value and maybe you bake in premiums because we think Saylor's gonna do interesting things with this and there's future cash flows. Okay, fine, you can build whatever models you want. Again, I don't think we've started GameStop. Once we start going GameStop, could this thing hit, I don't know, 10x NAV? Absolutely. And at some point, you look at this thing and you go, okay, I need to, like, exit and park this. You know, if I have an IRA account, where do I park it? I need to get out. And then you're starting to play the cryptocurrency games, which is less interesting to me, but it is what it is. I think, though, with Saylor, the way I personally think about this is, you know, as an investor in the public markets, which obviously that's not where I spend my time, but I do think it's fun just to think about. I like to look at, you know, what is a CEO or a founder really good at? What have they executed on the past, and like, what do I think they could reasonably just kill it out in the future? So when I look at, for example, with Tesla, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, Tesla trades crazy. It's like, look, dude, Elon might be the greatest of all time for entrepreneur, engineer, like, magician, whatever the hell you want to call this guy, ever. So if he puts out a report and he tells me he's going to drive the levelized cost of energy below 1 cent per kilowatt hour and he's going to deliver robots to every home, you know what? He's delivered every other time. I'm likely to believe that guy. Fine. So I'm willing to give him a huge premium. On the other hand, when I look at someone like Saylor, tremendous amount of respect for him. Do I believe he's going to build a software product around it? I don't know. Like, I'm skeptical. I haven't seen him deliver a great software product or whatever like that. However, what I have seen this guy do is become one of the best financial engineers mm-hmm. that I've ever seen with what he's doing right now. He is murdering the markets right now. And so do I believe that, and I think this is where he can also get somewhat of a moat and sort of a network effect around his capital or basically economies of scale with his capital. Do I believe if this man holds 2-4% of all of the world's Bitcoin that he can't do interesting things financially with it? Absolutely, I do. He's already proving right now he can. Mm-hmm. So what do I think he could do if he holds that much Bitcoin? Well, just think, like, like, just because, and this is where I disagree with a lot of Bitcoiners, you know, or some hardcore ones, like, just because we're moving to, like, a hard money digital standard doesn't mean, like, all, like, financial markets are going to stop. There will be lending markets. Those lending markets are going to be priced differently. Maybe they're much smaller. But, like, financial activity doesn't just stop in that world. So two things he could do with that. One, he can actually take the Bitcoin and do, I don't know, like, lending on a non-custodial lending for stablecoins protocol, like what Lava is doing. That's one interesting idea. Another interesting idea is if we ever get the Lightning Network to the scale that I think we all believe it could be, which is all the world's economic activity, potentially orders of magnitude higher once you have micropayments, AIs, all this stuff, could Sailor put a lot of that on a whole bunch of Lightning nodes and just be routing and just collecting 1%, 2%, 3%, 4% all day? Absolutely, and that's very easy, explainable yield. So if I were to take a bet, just guessing, again, pure hopium, pure guesswork, but based on what I've seen Sailor do and what he could do, I think he could generate in the future real yield on those kind of products.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. And I think I was initially, you know, I wrote a piece that was private and I shared it.
Yeah, it was great.
With each of you, right?
Yeah, it was really good.
When published.
Well, yeah, when published.
it's just my process of thinking through this. And when I go back and read it now, I'm like, oh, I was so naive. Because I'm looking at it and I was like, okay, well, now that the ETFs, I wrote it before the ETFs. I was like, okay, now that the ETFs are here, he's got to figure out something else to do because, like, the ETFs, you know, can suck up a lot of the oxygen. I think, like, it's, like, very naive. There's a big running room of, like, these captive capital vehicles and kind of managers that can go for a long, long time. But I did, in that piece that I shared with you, like, talk about, well, if you've got all this Bitcoin, what could you do with it? And I think, you know, various types of lending and yield and Lightning, you know, routing fees and stuff seem like real possibilities. I also think you can take it and build like a treasury system for all of the other companies that want to execute a Bitcoin treasury or a sovereign wealth treasury system. Like, if I don't know does anybody know how Bukele and those guys do their treasury today? Is there, like, is that publicly discussed or known, or is that?
I believe it's held on a BitKey.
I don't know if it's public. I don't even know what it is. I mean, they probably hold it with, you know, like BitGo or some other custodian.
You can imagine
Anchorage, or
you can imagine, like, you know, like Sailor writing the book and then proselytizing that story and providing the software that helps that happen. And then if you stand in that position, you can also do a lot of things around, you know, custody and lending, and you can sort of, like, make it easy to flip a switch with any of those solutions and route things towards places where you get fees. So I know it's probably too early to do any of that. I think the right answer is just keep doing the financial engineering thing and keep selling more bonds, issuing new, you know.
But let me challenge that a little bit. You know, they, like, today they're just not in a position to be that solution because they don't even have a Bitcoin custody solution. Mm-hmm.
Do they use Fidelity or something?
Coinbase and Fidelity.
Okay.
So they'd have to build that, and then it's, you know, untested, and they'd have to gain market confidence in that. And also, I don't really see how that, like, leverages the fact they have a lot of Bitcoin. Like, you can own zero Bitcoin and still be a better.
It's closer than the metaverse, but.
You know, like, you know, River and Block and BitGo and companies like that either are or could offer such services, and I don't see how MicroStrategy leverages, like, Sailor marketing and their Bitcoin to beat out competitors in that way. Where some of the other financial services, any financial service that depends on you having Bitcoin, they will be in the best position of anyone.
Right. So there was this one, actually, we're going to talk about. Somebody shared out this morning, a guy, I didn't recognize his name, but his Twitter profile had, like, his cover looked like it was from the Headlands. Do you remember, you know what I'm talking about? He had, like, two different lending ideas. You're looking at me like, he had one where
I know what you're talking about. I haven't.
Was that Max sent it and he's?
Well, I think I sent it, but I
oh, you sent it, but you haven't read it. That's fair. That's fair.
No. You right. Hold on. Do you know the philosophy?
Just send anything that's potentially
fire ready aim. Isn't that the order?
Okay, I'll read it. So this guy Mike Cagney. Do you know who this is?
No.
Never heard of him. Okay, Figure Markets is the company. He's a co-founder and CEO, Figure board chair, macro trader, blockchain enthusiast. Blah blah. So. He says, so what if we offered the following? BTC second mortgage. Let's say you have a $500,000 home and a $350,000 mortgage. We lend you up to 250,000 $1,200, 1.2 CLTV to buy BTC, subject to holding the BTC in escrow as collateral, no credit check, no underwriting, market interest rate, fully prepayable without penalty. So that's effectively like, get a second lien on your home and use that to get Bitcoin exposure, diversify away from your exclusively your real estate and get Bitcoin exposure. Then the other one is a BTC first mortgage. He said, we've done these before. You put up 500K in BTC as collateral. We lend you 500K to buy 500K property, no money down. So that's basically like you custody, you know, you deposit your Bitcoin assets and you get a home of the equivalent value. And I guess they control both the Bitcoin assets and a first lien on the home. Mm-hmm. But those are still both
they aren't capitalizing on MicroStrategy owning hundreds of thousands.
That's
of
my
Bitcoin.
Point. Yeah. Yeah, it's the opposite. Also, like Lava, you mentioned kind of the non-custodial Bitcoin lending. That doesn't capitalize on
having a lot of Bitcoin.
Having a lot of Bitcoin is the opposite.
But you mentioned Lightning Network. So Lightning Network is one example of where you could deploy Bitcoin and earn yield off of that. And I think all of us are pretty bullish on Lightning. It's not a big business today, but it could absolutely be a monster business and a pretty incredible way to earn yield. I mean, you literally can self-custody.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Like name any other financial investment where you can self-custody and earn yield.
Well, this is kind of my own long-term thinking.
It's extremely unique, right? So you completely eliminate counterparty risk.
Totally.
The only risk you're taking...
Hot wallet.
The only risk you're taking is security and operationally.
Right.
But those tools and infrastructure is just getting better and better and better. That risk will always remain because you can turn it from a hot wallet to a warm wallet.
Yeah.
You can put keys in an HSM and... You can harden it, but it's still, you can never eliminate that risk. So you always have to price that risk.
Right.
But that risk compared to any other type of investment is you're really reducing the amount of risk you're taking. So you're going to say something?
Yeah, no, I was just saying, this is my own, like just personally, long-term, thing I've thought a lot about is this is the only thing I feel comfortable getting yield on my Bitcoin with, ever.
I'll give another example that isn't, it's not really developed yet, but the concept is there. And that is like Fidelity Bond. So there's a number of different protocols that have been somewhat developed, but a form of Sybil resistant, like CoinSwap is a known protocol that's had some development. And with, it's mixing software. So a bunch of people, actually with CoinSwap is just, I think it just pairs two people. So it's like a maker taker market. One person wants to gain privacy with their coins, and the other person wants to earn a little bit of money, and they use their coins to help mix the coins. But any type of coin swap or coin join type of marketplace, you always have to protect against Sybil attacks. Because the government or chain analysis companies or some form of adversary to that system could do a Sybil attack and be every other participant. Like in a coin join, there's 100 participants. And 99 are chain analysis, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then obviously they know which coins are yours on the other side. So how do you combat against that? CoinSwap defines, and I think JoinMarket does as well, defines a Sybil resistance measure using Fidelity Bonds where you, as the person who's wanting to earn money out of the system, you have to lock up your coins for a certain period of time.
Yep.
So you can keep them in cold storage. You keep them in self-custody. The cost you're bearing, though, is that you can't spend them for a month or 3 months or a year or some measure of time. So there's a real cost to it.
Yeah, it's cost capital.
But the reason that helps with the Sybil attacks is like if you have to lock up a lot of capital for a long period of time, it's very costly to spin up many of these. So that's the Sybil resistance. But the, what do you do? Why are you incentivized to even participate? Because you get a yield. So this is even better than Lightning in the sense that it's not only self-custody, but it's also cold storage.
Interesting.
And you're earning yield. That again is unprecedented. I don't know of anything in the world where you earn a yield with zero counterparty risk and essentially, there's always operational and security risk with self-custody, but it's even reduced further from Lightning.
And this is this a particular product or a protocol or a company or what?
The concept.
a concept. and there's no implementation.
Someone needs some
idea. What
does
Trump say? It's an idea of a concept. I have an idea of the concept of how to do it. So the Fidelity bonds is a concept that can be applied to different protocols.
Okay.
CoinSwap is one. Join Market is another. And some of the new layer two scaling things also have talked about, like with timeout trees, like have talked about using Fidelity bonds as a way to reduce the risk you have in your liquidity provider.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I just expect this to keep popping up as a tool to make something else work. But it certainly doesn't exist today in terms of like a popular. So it's been implemented, but there's no popularity or usage behind it.
So 2001, I don't understand. So I've always been hesitant to use any of that stuff because I don't want to get my coins tainted or whatever. So you're saying, well, how does that work? So if I have my money locked up in cold storage, it's not being used in any of the coin joins. Is that right?
No, let's say the two of us are participating in a coin swap.
Yeah.
I'm the one that wants to gain privacy. We form a Bitcoin transaction, you provide your coins, I provide my coins.
Yeah.
The outputs, you're getting your coins back, or you're getting the same amount back plus a fee.
Yep.
So you get fresh new coins, and those fresh new coins that go back to you are time locked.
Is there?
So that's your cost.
Is there?
And both parties have to participate in Fidelity bonds.
No, because I'm paying the fee.
He's paying the fee to get because he wants privacy.
So the one who pays the fee and gets privacy doesn't need the Fidelity bond.
Right, because they're not. They're the ones seeking privacy.
Yeah.
So what this does, if I understand right, this means that if Chainalysis were running the other 99, they would have whatever quantity of Bitcoin was used to, that might be time locked for a month or a year or whatever, and so they can't run that many times. Is that effectively the Fidelity bond is just slowing down their ability to?
It's increasing the cost.
It's increasing the cost.
To perform a simple attack.
But,
right. Okay.
But,
yep.
But to be clear, so I like this in principle, but I would argue, at least from my naive understanding, I still like the Lightning Network trade-offs more because in this world, yes, you're raising the cost to have Chainalysis or whatever, some actor you don't want involved be involved. But like, imagine if that actor has access to infinite funds or close to infinite funds. Even if you reduce that, maybe it goes from 99 to whatever, some number, but there's still a chance of you getting either your coins tracked in some way you don't want or tainted with some party you don't want. Is that fair?
It's certainly fair that we don't know right now.
Yeah.
Right. And anything to do with coin joins, mixers, there's some certain territory which is definitely illegal, running a centralized mixer. And then there's other activities that are unknown and uncertain.
Yeah, my guess, and I don't know, I mean, I'm just kind of speaking, I mean, I'll be very curious to see how this evolves, but a lot of people, my guess would be, are still like wary of involving themselves in any kind of mixing. Whereas with the Lightning Network stuff, yes, you have the hot wallet risk. Although personally, I think this is where I would, I would not trust myself to do this. Would I trust River to do this for me? Absolutely all day, right. And I would gladly split
it. But again,
that.
Fidelity bond, the concept,
yeah,
earning yield that way is not tied to mixing.
To the mixing, yeah. I get
your
point.
One example,
yeah.
Also, like, I'm not arguing that this will displace Lightning Network.
Totally. No, of course.
This is another example of earning yield off your Bitcoin, and even in one aspect, a better example, in that you can have it cold storage.
Yeah.
But it definitely has these other
trade-offs.
Risks.
Yeah.
So maybe like you or I, as like American citizens, aren't going to do this anytime soon.
Right.
But other people around the world
right.
don't either. Have more risk tolerance or are in a position where it's less of a risk to them, they might
right.
do it. And we might gain regulatory clarity over time too, where it all of a sudden it's very clear that it's legal to participate in such a market.
And you rock and roll. Yeah. One idea that I do think is really important from all of these examples, Lightning Network or whatever these non-custodial or close to non-custodial yields are, is eventually I think this is going to reshape the concept of the new reference rate. Like everyone now is like talking about Fed's rate, which is just, hey, here's DK, Steve, and Max. Seems like we should be about 4.5%, no?
Right.
I think that what's really interesting to me in just watching a new economy emerge is for the first time in human history with non-custodial or close to non-custodial yield, I've been thinking Lightning Network, but maybe something similar. We may have a market dictated, naturally emergent reference rate, mm-hmm. which is, that's crazy.
Yep.
I agree.
I mean, I think everything in Bitcoin, because it's like so foundationally open, everything's auditable, verifiable. It's like, it means you have the opportunity, everything built on top of it is also has the opportunity to be rebuilt as open and verifiable. Yeah. I think that's like a really exciting thing when you have that first layer primitive, then you can build other things like social media, Nostr stuff is coupled in certain ways, right? But also these different, you know, things in Lightning or other types of, you know, maybe voting someday should have properties like this where it's auditable and verifiable and immediately available.
But before we jump off MicroStrategy, I wanted to ask you all's opinion on one more thing, because this is something that I actually, as we were talking about risks, this one started marinating my head more and more. And I know I've heard people talk about it, but frankly, I don't think it's been talked about enough. I hope this gets changed in the coming years. Maybe you guys have some more insight on this. It seems to me, honestly, if I were to try and like zoom out and say, okay, we're going to keep having these, you know, whatever market swings, 4-year cycles, what would cause, you know, a massive crash in the cost of Bitcoin? The biggest thing I could come up with is basically Coinbase getting hacked. Like, as far as I understand, Coinbase is the primary custodian for like all of the ETFs, with the exception of Fidelity, which is self-custodying. I think most of MicroStrategy, maybe all of it, I don't know. Seems like a pretty fucking big honeypot. I get that they're good, I get they have good security, but like, what's your take on that? How big of a risk is that?
Well, I agree with you. If it occurs, it would be, you know, set things back by, you gotta silence your phone, man.
Yeah, that's the computer.
Oh, okay.
Too poppy.
It would set things back 2 cycles or something, like 8 years.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah.
I don't think it'd be a death blow, just like Agreed. Gox wasn't, but it would be really bad. The probability of it happening, it's certainly not zero.
Right.
I think it's fairly low. But, you know, I think Coinbase takes their cold storage security very seriously, but, you know, they're not a pure Bitcoin play. And so
that's my concern too.
Technology that they use is not optimized for Bitcoin. Like, if you're only going to support Bitcoin, you'd make certain technical choices. They didn't do that because they also have cold storage for other coins. And so if you're going to support multiple coins, the smart engineering way to go about it is create a general layer that supports all the coins, and that is more efficient engineering wise and totally makes sense from an engineering perspective, but you do not have the best security possible for Bitcoin. So I would really like to see Bitcoin only companies like River, Block, Fidelity, etc., who either have or could have such a solution for ETF providers and the MicroStrategy of the world emerge and distribute the coins a lot more than we see today.
And my understanding is that the reason that Coinbase is so central to the ETFs is because once they got one across, like BlackRock or somebody got across, everybody just said, let's not take on any risk, let's just use the same custodian because we know that that will get approved.
But that's
not their plan long-term, let's be 100% Coinbase. It's just like, let's make sure that we get approved and don't fall behind the race that everybody else is running. Over time, probably diversify our custodial our custodial risk across multiple custodians.
I mean, my take on this has always been sort of similar to yours, and this is obviously why I'm so bullish on River. I mean, you know, obviously, disclosure, I'm invested in River as well, but for a good reason, which is, you know, Alex, to your point, has made such, and Block too, I mean, you guys have made such extremely principled decisions, Bitcoin only. Like, I view on the 20-year time scale that Coinbase is AOL. And I think that because even though they have great engineers and they're obviously well capitalized, like, I don't care how good you are, to your point, if you don't focus, you make trade-offs, and those trade-offs are not great necessarily for Bitcoin. So my question, I guess, is like, how quick can we see these Bitcoin-only companies come to market? Because I don't know, man, like, that's like the only thing that's just kind of like sitting there throbbing to me is like, as long as that's still there, like, that's a kind of like flashing big concern in my mind. And like, I don't know. I mean, River's great, but like, it's not a public company yet. Block is. I don't know. You can share there, but like, it would be great to see this happen like next year, not wait 4 years for Coinbase to get hacked.
Well, right. I mean, what we know, what's available right now, that BitGo and Anchorage, and there's other. These are
similar trade-offs.
These are not. Well, right. they aren't Bitcoin only companies.
Yeah.
Each of their architectures is different. And I think they probably all make some trade-offs with respect to if you're Bitcoin only. But you know, BitGo's 2 or 3 model is pretty interesting. But I think even that, just even if you have 3 multi-coin companies that each have different architectures and are run by different people and have different governance, distributing coins across all 3 is much better than all with Coinbase.
Right.
So to me, that's phase 1 of like improving the overall security of Bitcoin. And phase 2 would be Bitcoin-only companies coming to market with a product that meet, you know, checks all the boxes regulatory-wise. And Fidelity self-custody, right? And
yeah,
with a Bitcoin-only solution. So, whether you're River Block, I mean, there's a lot of opportunities in front of you. So, I think it's less of a, I don't think those companies think this is a bad idea. It's
right.
More just like they each have like, you know, River maybe has like a dozen great ideas and they can only execute on 3 or 4 to give
totally.
It time. And then Block has like 50 or 60 great ideas that Block wants to execute on, but can only execute on like 8 to 12 at a given time.
Do you think there's an opportunity for a really sharp entrepreneur to start from scratch and do this right now? Only focused on Bitcoin.
I want to tell David about there's a focus mode.
That's on your phone. If you're running the computer,
but
that
when you change it on your phone, it also enables it on your computer. You have it on Do Not Disturb.
You said focus.
Focus. Is it on focus?
The technology.
It was.
Only experts in Bitcoin. Nothing else. Don't worry, guys.
So look,
not even.
Well, my knee-jerk reaction is yes, because I mean, if you're a startup that's your sole purpose, obviously you can execute on this.
Yeah.
It's not hard. It's not well. I mean,
it is.
It's
hard.
Somewhat hard to build, but you're not coming across like there's not like research problems to solve. Like
right.
You know you can build this.
Yeah.
So yes, you'd want to hire some experienced engineers who have done it before, but you can definitely build this in like 12 to 18 months.
A lot of it is like trust,
and then,
right?
You then you also need, well, sorry. So you can build the product in 12 to 18 months. You could, in that same period of time, you need to do all the regulatory work. And that's where, you know, that might take more than 12 or 18 months just due to bureaucracy and just time. And then you need to build up trust in the space.
Yeah, exactly. That's hard.
Which can take time. I mean, like my own philosophy on just self-custody for any of us or anyone individually is like, don't put all your eggs in a basket of a new product. Even like, I'm a huge champion for BitKey from mm-hmm. Block, but I would not advise anyone to like take, if they have a bunch of Bitcoin in a Trezor or on Coinbase right now, and to move all of it into BitKey on day one, that would not be what I would suggest. I would suggest like moving 10% in or something, and then waiting a year and
mm-hmm.
gaining more confidence and become comfortable, and then move more in. So it'd be the same. I mean, I would admit, like if I were in charge of MicroStrategy at Bitcoin, I would also follow. But the thing is, okay, let's say a startup does this 18 months later, has a product. Let's say they've gained regulatory clearance. You can still make it. You don't go to Michael Saylor and say, move all your Bitcoin to me.
Yeah.
You say,
10%
move 5%, 10%,
yeah.
or move 1%.
Because yeah.
you know, it's the same pitch as like a new mining chip vendor
yeah.
coming into the space. You don't go to a miner and say, move, you know, you have like, 40 exahash per
yeah.
second right now. Move all of it to our product. Just move 10%. Because your customer wants diversity in their suppliers. Right?
Yeah, I also think, I mean, you need the right founder for this. Like, you know, obviously the engineering is challenging and that matters, but I think more importantly, you need someone that, frankly, like public companies and like these guys are going to trust, and that's got to be someone that, I don't know, like quote unquote real adult in the room, whatever that means. I don't think the kind of project that I personally would want to fund. Some just like kind of like gnarly hacker. Like this is somewhere where like I want someone that can, you know, that has the gnarly hackers, but like can wear a suit if he needs to too.
So not Mallers.
I wouldn't say specifically not him. I wasn't thinking of him specifically actually at all. I don't think of Mallers as a gnarly hacker, but I guess what I'm just saying
he's
is
not it's not a suit.
It's not a suit. It's not technically it. The technical challenges are there.
More like a perception thing.
It's kind of like the sailor's the right guy to sell this product. You need the right guy or woman or whatever to sell this product.
Yeah, cool. I know we have like tons of.
I literally
had my alarm go off on purpose on this phone to stop us. All the iMessage beeps were my computer, but the alarm was.
We barely even got started with our list.
We didn't. We got through like one item.
Oh no! so this is why we don't have every tweet we share.
See, it's like you didn't put all.
You didn't put every idea on there. Well, it's like well.
We got a few. Well, I would say this was a success because I had fun.
Next time we'll do a 12-hour live stream.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Until 100K.
Until 100K.
Exactly.
Our eyes will be red because we'll be so tired.
No, exactly.
We'll have lasers and we'll be tired.
Just exhausted.
Tired eyes.
Yeah.
But I think just because I have another commitment, I'm gonna have to call it at this. You guys are welcome to hang around and keep chatting, but
yeah. I'm good for today.
Cool.
So we live streamed this, but we did not record it.
We'll have
I have
to
no
see.
Idea. We'll have to see.
Yeah. There's all kinds of settings, and I don't really know what I'm doing, so.
Okay. Because we want to learn from this, right? So we want to be able to
ideally,
see it.
Ideally, it would also be recorded.
Okay.
And
how did this get blasted out? Like, how does...
I didn't share it either.
How do we know we have more than zero people listening to this? Did it go to your Twitter?
There's a thing that says DKSF is hosting.
Oh, so it is like a Spaces then.
But I'd be careful because, like, you don't want to create feedback if it broadcasts 10 seconds later into your mic. So maybe turn your mic down.
For anyone listening,
yeah,
did you
still,
hear that?
It still shows.
Oh, okay. Why does no one do this on X?
What does live 21 mean? Does that mean there's 21 watchers or something?
Yeah.
Oh, the perfect number.
Why do I never see anyone do this on X?
Yeah, this is a really great idea, actually.
I think it's just, it's more involved. You need like third-party streaming software and stuff like that. It's not, you know, like a space is just like pop it and go. Or is this?
How do you see who the audience is?
I don't know.
You're watching it live.
There's 24.
So it's oh, now it's gone.
No, it's still there.
No, it just oh, it's expanding.
Oh, I see it. Hey, and we're actually overlapping with one of my other favorite shows, Stacker News Live.
It disappeared.
Hey, DK Bitcoin Jam. All right.
Hold on, you see the audience?
Yeah, it says 26 views.
I see 26.
And I'm seeing myself looking at myself.
Is that right if I cut it?
Where, how do you see
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I don't think people want to see us.